Chapter 74, Trixie Nixie. Nix panicked and tried to shove Sarah off. Instead, her arms flapped at her sides and hit the stage. She tried to tell Sarah to get off, but only managed to move her tongue, which gesture Sarah completely misinterpreted. Finally, Nix managed a blood-curdling groan, and Sarah detached her face from Nix's.
Sigmut Balkan.
That was definitely not what Nix was trying to say, but she barely noticed the words. What scared Nix more than anything is that her voice was low and breathtakingly beautiful. At last, her situation sank in. She was Tiago. She was inside a boy's body. The thought made her feel nauseous, overwhelmed, and extremely guilty. She had literally stolen Tiago's life. But what else could she have done? Let his body decompose? At least now they had a chance to switch. She would keep him alive until she could get back into her own body. But where was Tiago? With her mortal eyes, which she was having trouble focusing, she saw only the theater lights, Sarah, and a few other onlookers. He had to be watching. Was he angry at her for hijacking his body? He couldn't be happy about Nix kissing his girlfriend. Mr. Turtle Tab sat Nix up and patted her back.
You scared the crap out of us.
Tabut nuntuk.
What?
Maricont.
Sarah put a hand over her mouth. Turtle Tab swore.
Looks like he might have some brain damage.
Nix stopped trying to talk. Did she have brain damage? She seemed to be thinking okay. She could probably get through her times tables. 0 through 5, anyway. The moment Nix thought about thinking, she realized she had an entire brain full of memories she'd never seen before. It was like 100 TVs playing at once, each screen showing a moment in Tiago's life. Nix tried to focus on something else, but it was no use. The memories filled her in a flash flood, and some of them were extremely personal. This made reading his journal seem like a courtesy. She was experiencing his life in reverse. It both terrified her and filled her with unfathomable euphoria. Sorry, Tiago. Really, really sorry. But on a much deeper level, she couldn't have been less sorry. Her new brain held everything Nix could ever want to know about her crush. The fact that Tiago had never remotely had any romantic feelings toward Nix lost a little of its sting, considering the awe he felt for her singing voice and how he thought she might be as funny as Jordan. Nix didn't bother to try to walk or speak when the paramedics took her away. She was watching the life and times of Tiago Padilla. In the ambulance, Nix relived Tiago's Christmases and birthdays. At the hospital, she explored his relationship with his parents and siblings. She tried to gloss over his time with Sarah, but it flowed through her mind without asking permission. It wasn't until Tiago's family arrived that Nix was able to pull her focus away enough to interact with the real world. Everyone was crying and talking to Nix like she was 4 years old. She tried to reassure them that their son was still, well, not alive, but at least they hadn't lost him forever. He'd be back. Was Tiago's spirit standing right next to her, screaming at her to get out? She took a moment to listen, but heard only Mr. Padilla sobbing. Should she try to leave his body? No, not while his family was here. That's all they needed, to watch their son die. Maybe after she was away from all the heart monitors. Hang in there, Tiago. He'd have himself back soon. Nix tried unsuccessfully to say a few words, but did actually manage to nod at an appropriate time, which set everyone clapping like it was graduation day. Nix endured CT scans, MRIs, motor skills tests, cognitive tests. After she peed the bed, they gifted her a bedpan. Being a boy felt so far removed from anything Nix had experienced, she may as well have been a dinosaur. She really, really missed her old body. Fat or not, it had spoken when she wanted it to, walked, and could use the restroom without help, not to mention sing. Out of curiosity, Nix tried to sing as Tiago. It sent everyone rushing around. Apparently, it sounded like a cry of pain. Nix felt so overwhelmed with the deluge of memories, unresponsive body, not to mention totally new equipment, that she felt her mind starting to shut down. When she woke up next, a female doctor was in the room speaking to her parents, Tiago's parents.
An ATV accident when he was 14, Monica was saying. They said it was like shaken baby syndrome. The neurons were loosened or something. They told us if he has any kind of head trauma, he could die.
Mr. Padilla nodded.
No more sports. He took the news really hard.
What? Were they talking about Tiago? Was that why he seemed like kind of a wuss the night they caught Pillowhead? She remembered him feeling his head, like he was worried it would fall off. The revelation that the most perfect boy in the universe was so fragile filled Nix with despair. Why hadn't he told them? This whole time, Nix had been trying to protect Sarah, but Tiago needed her protection just as much. Had Tiago's neurons detached when he fell out of the tank? Or maybe it had been the pressure of ice smashing him from all sides as the tanks burst. I'm a little familiar with the phenomenon, the doctor said, but apart from the nerve damage, his brain activity seems healthy. I wouldn't be surprised if he can process everything that's going on. Monica hugged her husband, then sat next to her son, and started speaking rapidly in Spanish. Nix understood. She laughed, which sounded more like gagging. In Spanish, Monica said, "Blink your eyes slowly if you can hear me." Nix blinked without much difficulty. Apparently, that didn't require a lot of brain power. Monica's wig was askew, but she didn't seem to notice. The doctor and Mr. Padilla joined Nix at the bed. "If you can," Monica said, her voice trembling, "blink twice in a row." Nix complied and received 3 brilliant smiles in return. The Padillas asked Nix yes or no questions through the night, which accomplished absolutely nothing, mostly because, "Are you really the neighbor girl?" is not one of the first questions parents think to ask an injured son. At least, they seemed happier. Their son wasn't brain dead. A few hours later, Jordan showed up with his dad. Nix nearly had an aneurysm, trying to communicate with him. He only asked the same useless questions. "Are you in pain? Do you know who I am? Do you remember what happened at the auditorium?" Nix said a lot of made-up words and slapped a lot of bed rails. But in the end, Jordan went home, still ignorant of the fact that his best friend was trapped inside his other best friend. Come to think of it, Jordan hadn't mentioned Nix at all. Had the demon taken the fat suit and disappeared? Or was it trying to fool everyone into thinking he was Nix? She was fairly certain the demon had also taken Urbanek's note. Her body had been carrying something that looked a lot like a black sneaker. A few hours later, Nix awoke to a dark hospital room. She wasn't in any pain, which was nice. She was really tired of peeing herself. They'd since fitted her with a diaper. Nix didn't know what thought was more horrifying, never regaining control of her bladder, or having to learn to pee like a guy. Wait, what was she thinking? This wasn't permanent. She could leave any time. And Tiago was probably waiting for her to do just that. Monica was asleep in the chair next to Nix. If Nix's heart stopped, the machines would buzz and wake her up. But it didn't matter. Nix had spent enough time in Tiago's body. He was healthy enough. It was time to give it back. If Tiago still had trouble getting in, Nix could come back for a bit. At the very least, she needed to communicate with Tiago and apologize for stripping him of everything secret he'd ever had. Nix took a deep breath and tried to stop Tiago's heart. She felt nothing. No bird flapping in her chest, no valves, no blood. She tried for a good 45 minutes, but it was clear that, at least until Nix gained some control over Tiago's body, she was stuck. The next morning, the Padillas took Nix to a neurologist in Switzerland. The rest of the family rented a nearby cottage. For the following week, everyone communicated with Nix by using a large alphabet poster. The therapist would tap each letter, and Nix blinked twice when it was the one she wanted. Her first words were, "Nix. Call Nix. Go home. Wear Nix. Talk Jordan." They all seemed to think she was delirious because they assured her that she would reconnect with her friends soon enough, but now it was time to focus on recovery. The next week, Nix graduated to pointing at letters with a baton. After the umpteenth time of Nix asking them to call and find out what was going on with Jordan and Nix, Monica finally laid down the law.
"Enough about Nix," she said in Spanish. "That girl is trouble, and I don't want you even thinking about her. Your father called Sergeant Frost, and Jordan is doing fine."
This seemed awfully suspicious to Nix. Why would Monica be so adamant about not giving her son any information on Nix or Jordan? Nix tried to bring it up again, and again, Monica got so angry that a doctor had to come in and calm her down. From that point on, anytime Nix mentioned Woods Cross or anyone in it, she was completely ignored. Something was definitely going on. They wouldn't let her send a message to Jordan or Nix or anyone. They always redirected controversial topics to discussing her medical records or the dinner menu. By now, Nix could manage to get about half the food in her mouth, and her tastes had changed substantially. Whereas fish used to make her vomit, now she couldn't get enough of it. Eventually, Nix stopped asking about Nix and Jordan. She focused on getting Tiago's body back into working order so it would be ready for him, when she finally figured out a way to give it back. It was 6 months before Nix learned to speak, 8 before she was mostly intelligible. The good news was that she spoke in a lovely British accent. Apparently, that was what her mouth was used to. She also spoke flawless Spanish. At one point, when they were out for a stroll, Nyx shuffling along with a walker. She managed to borrow a cell phone and called Jordan's house before Monica noticed. The woman who answered said the Frosts had moved, and she didn't know where to, nor did she have their number. If only Nyx had had her apartment number memorized. She could have called her mother and found out what was going on with her demon daughter. Nyx would have loved to call random people in Woods Cross until someone could give her some useful information. But even if Tiago's phone hadn't been ruined in the aquarium, U.S. cell phones didn't work in Europe. UrbanX's note was probably gone forever. No one in Woods Cross understood the danger they were in. A year and a half after Nyx entered Tiago's body, he was pronounced fully recovered. And the family was free to return to their house on Gallows Hill. Nyx was ready. The demons had stolen her body and her life, but she wasn't going to take it lying down. The story continues in Book 2, Little Dead Riding Hood.
Thanks for listening to Sleeping Fatty, Book 1 in the Exeter series. This is not a small accomplishment. You've stuck with us for over 30 hours of narration. Please share the podcast with others or gift them a paper copy of this book, which is available on Amazon. It would also be awesome if you checked out my other available books. Speaking of my other books, we're currently deciding which book to present next on the podcast. There's always the sequel to Sleeping Fatty. Book 2 is entitled Little Dead Riding Hood and features Nyx inside Tiago's body as she tries to fix the problems her demon self has caused and eventually, hopefully, get her body back. It's 2/3 written, and if we went that route, the episodes would be more spaced out than they have been. Alternatively, I could read one of my other books. If you have a preference, drop me a note at anuncommonauthor.com or message us on the Anchor app. You can also email me at rchancock@gmail. R as in Romeo, C as in Charlie, Hancock, H-A-N-C-O-C-K. Besides Dead Riding Hood, the other three options are An Uncommon Blue, The Time Traveler's Sewing Kit, or Bury Me, which is a retelling of my earlier novel called Groom. Here's the gist. An Uncommon Blue. In Telesphore, the glowing color of a person's palm determines their place in society, and touching hands with another mixes the colors permanently. When 16-year-old Bruno accidentally kills a royal soldier, he goes from favored to fugitive. Now Bruno's only chance at survival is to become someone else. That means a haircut, a change of wardrobe, and most important, getting rid of his once cherished blue. Now he's visiting parts of town he never knew existed, and making friends with people he would have crossed the street to avoid only weeks ago. At the last minute, Bruno's parents arrange a deal to clear his name and get his life back. All Bruno has to do is abandon those in the red slums that look to him as a leader and let an innocent green boy die in his place. The Time Traveler's Sewing Kit. Odd Graham hates tranquilizing his mom. It's not just wrestling her to the ground and forcing the injection, but the horror in her eyes every time. Although a clinic in London treats early onset dementia, 17-year-old Odd doesn't have enough money to buy his girlfriend a decent gift, let alone save his mother's sanity. Then Odd finds a dusty catalog with low-priced magical objects. He orders what he thinks will be a quirky gift for his girl. But when it arrives, it sets in motion a chain of demonic events that puts Odd's family and the entire city of Philadelphia in mortal danger. Now Odd must choose between keeping his mother safe and trying to stop the evil he released on the city. Good thing he's handy with a needle. Due to violent themes, this novel is recommended for children over 12. And last, Bury Me. Wendy loves Elmo, but with humanity on the brink of extinction, Parliament doesn't trust her to pick a proper husband. Elmo loves Wendy, but hundreds of genetically improved 16-year-olds think they're a better match for her. No one loves Dr. Barberson, and her traumatic high school memories are refreshed every time she enters a new clone. On her 1,000-year to-do list? 1. become the world's leading geneticist. 2. Fake a chromosomal apocalypse. 3. Create a society where hot guys fight over awkward girls. Only one person can temper Dr. Barberson's hatred of men and rescue humanity. Only one person can turn a group of violent teens into a family or make Wendy laugh so hard she cries. That person is a short, red-headed ninny who's terrified of lizards. And he has a 1 in 500 chance of surviving the husband trials. Thanks for spending time with us. Don't forget to check out our Bad Reviews for Good Books podcast, and I hope to hear from you soon.